Welcome to the OA Light a Meeting podcast. Please visit our website at oalaig.org, where you will find several speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, David G.
I am David. I'm the compulsive overeater. So incredibly honored and grateful to be here. I remember when I used to listen to these podcasts, I would binge and then purge and then go grocery shopping and then sit in my car in the Trader Joe's parking lot binging while listening to these. And I listened to so many of these. I knew everybody's story before I came into OA. Years later, I can do the same thing for somebody else. And it's such a blessing how this works. And just like Martha said, I have one hand with the sponsee and one hand on my sponsor. And that keeps me from falling. And I should not be here today. I should not be alive today. I'm a real compulsive overeader. And I was reading how it works. It says we share what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. And I was just thinking, like, what was it like before I even came? My mom and my dad, my mom was in college, and her dad pulled her out of college and said, you need to marry a doctor. And my mom was in love, and she was engaged to somebody else. And she moved back to New York, and she married a doctor. And she was in this horrid relationship with my father, my mom an alcoholic, and my dad an addict. And they never should have been together. And they had my sister, and my dad was incredibly abusive. And they had me because maybe I could fix it. Maybe I could be the solution. Even the night before I was born, my mom drank and crashed the car. And the next morning, there's David. Welcome to planet Earth. And ever since then, I've been trying to fix it. I've been trying to fix chaotic situations. And it was really chaotic growing up, and it really didn't make sense. I grew up on Long Island in Cold Spring Harbor. And it's a town where everything looks perfect. We had a house on the water. My dad was a doctor. My mom was a therapist. And they used to have these dinner parties. And people from the town would, like, come over to dinner. And everybody knew Dr. G, and everybody knew my mom. And, like, as soon as everybody left, like, a switch would go off, and my dad would just lose it on me and my sister. Lose his shit on us. And there was, like, chaos through the house. I always shared one of the first memories I have of childhood. My dad was, like, chasing my sister through the house. And he got her against the wall, and he was grabbing her by the chins, calling her a fat effing pig. And I was, like, five, and I, like, jumped on his back. And he threw me up against the wall. And, like, there was my mom across the hallway, like, looking at us. And me, like, screaming for her, like, help us. And she went into her room and closed the door. And I remember around that time, like, I felt something inside of me, which I didn't know at the time, turn off. Dissociate. Like, this isn't going to be my existence. And now I know, like, years later, what that actually means growing up in an abusive alcoholic household. But, like, it was too much for me. I can't feel this right now. Like, I'm shutting down, and I'll be here, but I won't really be here. And when I was 7 years old, I crawled into bed with my mom, and my dad was, like, raging through the house, and we locked ourselves into her meditation room. And I said, we got to go. And it finally, like, hit her that I was in pain, too. And she said, I know. And I said, no, we need to leave tonight. And the next morning, we woke up, and, like, off we went, running, escaping from my dad. And I just grew up, like, I would have bruises going to school that I would have to lie about. And I just never felt a part of. I didn't feel You know, my first, like, 8 years of school, I didn't speak to anyone, and they called me Mute Boy, and I got tested, you know, because they thought I was, like, mentally challenged. They didn't know what was wrong with me. I would go to school, I'd have my head down. I wouldn't talk to anyone. Like, my voice was taken from me so quickly. Like, I wasn't anybody. You know, and I would spend, like, a lot of my time at my best friend's house, who's still my best friend, and, like, the running joke in their family, they'd say, David, what do you want for breakfast? What do you want for lunch? What do you want for dinner? I'll have what Mark's having. Like, I didn't feel like I even deserved to, like, have a choice in what I was eating. And my parents got divorced when I was 7, and we moved across Long Island, and my mom started working a lot. And, you know, I remember she said to me, you're the man of the house now. And I'm the man of the house now. I'm 7 years old. I don't talk in school. I'm terrified that my dad is going to, like, come and break a restraining order and, like, kidnap me. And my sister is, like, picking on me relentlessly. Like, there's no way out. What do you mean I'm the man of the house? Like, I don't have the tools. I don't have a design for living to be a man of the house. And I would go to school and I didn't feel a part of, and I would come home and, you know, my dad used to follow my bus home from school. And that's when it started. I was 7 and my dad followed my bus home from school, and I would run down my driveway and go right into the ice cream. And the food worked. The food did for me what my parents couldn't do for me. The food made me feel okay. The food made me feel safe. And, you know, I didn't know what was wrong with me all these years. Like, once I got into the rooms and started reading the literature, which is, like, just as accessible then as it is now, like, it says in the, you know, AA 12 and 12, like, I have basic instincts, and when they get warped, my greatest natural asset turns into my greatest liability. And this instinct for security, like, to feel okay and loved and protected and, you know, have your peanut butter jellies sandwiches made in a bag with a note saying, have a great day at school. Like, that's all I wanted, though. And I didn't get that. Like, tuck me in at night. That's all I wanted, and I didn't get that. But I found it in a different way through the food. And the food became my mom and my dad and my friends and that security that I'd always been looking for. And I became the fat kid in school. And, you know, if you're the fat kid in school, it sucked. Being fat in school for 1 year sucks, but, like, I was fat from 7 years old until I was 17. You know, I was a fat kid. I got all the names that a fat kid got, you know, all the nicknames, all the songs that were sang to me, and I would go to school and I would just get tormented. And I would come home and my sister had a song for me. And my mom was always working and I was scared that my dad was going to come. And, like, thank God for the food. What, you know, what if the food wasn't there, like, I don't know what I would have done. And I already had a warped mind before I picked up the food. I remember being 5, you know, standing at my grandfather's balcony thinking about suicide. Already at 5, I comprehended, like, suicide means that my life is going to be over, which means I'm not going to get hurt anymore. And I also knew that suicide meant there's a funeral and people have to come to a funeral. And what really kept me from suicide was I didn't think anyone was going to come to my funeral. I'm an alcoholic as well, and that's my ego. Like, I care what people think about me even when I'm hypothetically dead. So the food did for me what I couldn't do for myself, and it was miserable. Like, I missed out on childhood. I don't know how to ride a bike. Even now, I don't know how to ride a bike. But, like, I didn't have friends. I never dated the girl growing up. I never, like, I lost out on that childhood. I never played video games. Like, I was too busy trying to fix things, like, real things, like, life things. I was friends with the teachers because I could relate to, like, the struggle. But, like, I didn't know how to connect with people. I didn't know, you know, it says in the literature, you know, we have the total inability to form true partnerships. That was me. Like, I didn't grow up in a house where you pass a thing and now it's your turn to talk about your feelings tonight. Like, I didn't have dinner. I didn't have like a homemade dinner really until my current girlfriend made it for me. I didn't live like a normal person. And, you know, so I'm the fat kid growing up, and my sister also suffers from this disease. She's been in and out of the rooms for 15 years now. And she's a little bit older, and I used to hear her throwing up at night. And, you know, she lost like 40 pounds in a summer, and I wanted what she had. And I was like young, and I snuck into her room because I'm a snoop, because if you grow up in an alcoholic household, you're probably a snoop. And you probably look in other people's drawers, and that's what I did. And, you know, I went in her drawers, and I found her diet pills. And I started taking them. And they say this is a progressive illness. You know, the progressive illness isn't just about the food. It's about anything that I put into my body. And it's also about my thoughts. You know, if I have a negative thought, even today, it's a progressive illness. You know, I obsess over the thought. And by the end of the day, I want to kill someone. You know, they hurt me a little bit. If I don't treat that thought in the day that I'm in, the illness, which is my mind, my thinking, it progresses and it gets worse. And now I have a huge story. And that's what happened with my dad and me not talking to him for 12 years. You know, I got a story, and then, you know, my story became my reality. And, you know, I started taking these diet pills, and by the time I was a senior in high school, I had lost 60 pounds. I had transferred to this prep school, and on the outside, I had my shit together. I was a three-sport athlete. I was taking 15 pills of hydroxycut a day, and I was a maniac. And I had my first girlfriend, though. And what that taught me was, if I look a certain way, you're going to like me. And what that also taught me was, if I gain 60 pounds, you're not going to talk to me like you're talking to me now. So I had a big F you to everybody, but I liked the attention, so I went to any lengths to make sure that I stayed skinny. And I became a raging bulimic. And this disease, like, it's two sides to the same, you know, token. I could be 500 pounds or I could be 100 pounds. I get it. Like, I'm just going to any lengths to control a situation because I want to fix it. And I became a raging bulimic, and I would pass out at sports practice in high school, and, you know, I would pass out during basketball games, and no one knew what was wrong with me. And I ended up going to 5 colleges in 4 years, and I don't remember anything from those years except for my binging and purging and diet pills. And college is when I found Adderall, so I'm taking 15 diet pills a day mixed with Adderall, mixed with being an alcoholic, mixed with snorting Xanax, and I'm out of my mind. And I'm, like, passing out while I'm driving, and literally, I haven't formed a true partnership with anybody yet in my life. I'm 21 years old, and I still haven't made a real connection to anybody on this planet. Because that's what the food does for me. That's what this progressive illness does for me. It takes me out of life. And I ended up hitting a really gnarly bottom in Manhattan. I was going from every Whole Foods, you know, doing the tour day Whole Foods in Manhattan. And I would calculate on my phone how many thousands of calories. I'm a list person. And I like taking lists. I like keeping, you know, statistics. I know, like, I like keeping it together. So I knew how many thousands of calories I binged every day. And I would go down to my gym, and I would punish myself, and I would work out every day until, you know, the calorie count on the treadmill matched the calorie count on my phone. Because I got to fix it, and I got to get rid of it. And if something's in my body, it's no good. I got to lose it. Because you have to like me. Because the only time I remember anyone liking me was when I was skinny. So I have to make sure that I don't get fat again. And this is what I'm thinking about all day long. I'm failing out of college. I haven't spoken to my dad in 10 years. And I haven't formed a true partnership because I'm just thinking about food and getting rid of it all day long. And I came into OA, and people would tell me, like, you're going to die. And the most beautiful thing about my first meeting was in Manhattan 7 years ago. And Diane, the Canadian woman who's in LA was there. And she was there in my meeting, and she'll say now, like, I never thought you were going to make it. Like, I came in really on the line of life or death. Like, I shouldn't be here today. And I didn't speak to anyone for 2 years, but I went to a meeting every day, and I didn't get a sponsor. And I got a lot of relief in those 2 years. I felt something greater than myself in those 2 years. But I was not willing to ask for help because all my life, like, I got to do it myself. I'm a do-it-your-own type of guy. And I moved out to L.A., and I was still messing around with the food. I knew there was relief here, but I couldn't do it. And finally, someone came up to me and said, let me sponsor you. And for some reason, I was like, okay. And the first week that I started working the steps, I got abstinent. And I haven't binged, purged, eaten flour or sugar in over 5 years. And it's all a result of what it says and how it works. You know, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. It used to be never have we seen a person fail, which is what it's really. Never have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our directions. How it works is how it works. I don't have to work David's program. I don't have to come in here and outthink everybody or quote the big book. I don't have to. It's literally how it works. It's how it works. You know, it says how it works. Why am I coming in here trying to do it my way? My way doesn't work. How it works is how it works. How it works. It literally says how it works. And still, you see people come in and out trying to do it their way, not work the steps, not do the deal, you know, how it works. I got a sponsor, and that also, like, nowhere does it say anything about sponsorship in any literature. In the big book, it doesn't say anything about sponsorship. I am not a higher power as a sponsor. My job as a sponsor is to make myself as invisible as possible so that the person who I'm working with finds a higher power. All my job is to guide them into a higher power. And, you know, just because I know what I'm saying from a podium does not mean that I'm a good sponsor or does not mean that I'm working this outside. You know, I really have to get clear on that. That this program is not about getting to a sponsor or getting the right sponsor or going to a meeting every day. I hear people, like, you know, say I did a 30 and 30 and people are clapping. Nowhere does it say do a 30 and 30 and how it works. Like, I do still. I almost go to a meeting every day, but, like, that's not a commitment. How it works is I work the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous every single day. And it starts with step one. I admit I'm powerless over food. When I put certain foods inside my body, I can't stop eating them. I have a physical allergy to food. You know, if I put a food inside my body, my physical allergic reaction is I want more. I can't stop eating it. You know, I'm an alcoholic, so I get it. You put it in my body, and it's going to shoot me out when it wants to stop. Like, I don't have control when I put certain foods over inside my body. That's my physical allergy. But it says in the literature, like, abstinence isn't enough. Because when I put down the food, I see what's really wrong with me. Dash, my life is unmanageable. My life is unmanageable not because the food is running my life. My life is unmanageable because I have a mind that tells me that the food is the solution to my life. And I listen to it. And that's insanity. Because the thing that is actually killing me, my mind tells me is going to save me. My mind tells me this time is going to be different. You know, my boss wronged me, this time the food will be the answer. Or fill in the blank, this time maybe the food will be my solution. And I got to watch my thoughts. What is my mind telling me when I come into Overeaters Anonymous? I'm a fat piece of shit. I am worthless. I couldn't even get through a yoga class without looking in the mirror and just murdering myself. My mind talks to me all day long, and it controls me. I have a narrator in my mind, and it tells me lies, and I listen to it. And it's not just about the food, because if my mind's lying to me about the food, it's probably running every single area of my life and I don't even know it. I'm probably insane. I'm probably just like that person downtown talking to himself. It's just, I'm doing it inside. And I wear a scarf so I look normal. I'm insane because I have a mind that talks to me and it tells me lies and I listen to it. Today, with 5 years of abstinence, I have a mind that tells me lies, and if I don't treat it, I'm in my disease, you know. So I have to see that I'm insane, which is the basis of step two, you know. Why am I going to seek anything other than me if I don't really see that I'm insane? I'm insane. I'm mentally ill. I'm mentally ill, and it says it all over the literature, but like, we want to come into the rooms and just talk about the food, but the food is just a substance. And the food is just a symptom. You know, I really have to get down to the causes and conditions, which is lack of power is my dilemma. I don't have the power to think like a normal person. So I have to find a new power. And I start talking to something that's not me in my mind. And I start saying, can you protect me from my mind? Because my mind's lying to me. Did you hear that thought? That's a lie. Can you help me? Can you protect me? And I start doing it a lot. And I put reminders in my phone, and I switch my watch, and I write to-do notes to remind me to go to this power. And the more that I go to this power, the better my life gets. And my mind stops telling me to go to the food. And that's how it works. I find a power that's greater than myself that can solve all of my problems today. And it's not just a bush league pinch hitter, like it says in step seven. I don't just go to this power once in the morning and once at night. I talk to this power all day long. All day long. You know, I heard this stat. I don't know if it's true. It may just be a stat that I pass on. But at 40,000 thoughts a day, neuroscientists say. And as addicts, we have four thoughts that we think about 40,000 times. I'm not good enough. Food's going to fix it. Fill in the blank's going to fix it. The job will fix it. The car will fix it. Whatever it is, I think about it all day long. And if I have 40,000 lies that I'm telling myself a day, like, I have to flush them down the toilet. And I do that through prayer. And I do it all day long. I live in a life of prayer today. And for me, step three, like, will of God, like, what feels good? I didn't know I couldn't trust my feelings when I came into OA. I couldn't trust my heart because I was just stuffing it with food. Like, getting abstinent is just the beginning. Getting abstinent allows me to develop a relationship with a higher power where when I connect to this power, limitless possibilities, like endless, amazing, magical lives happen to people who are connected to a higher power. And that's what step three is for me. I go to any lens to make sure that what's taking me away from a higher power is not in my life. I don't have alcoholics in my life anymore. There's not one active alcoholic in my life today. I don't have Facebook. I don't eat flour and sugar. Like, I really got to get clear on what's taking me away from a higher power. And that's what step three is for me. Like, every single day I make a decision to do what feels good. Not what feels good temporarily when I stuff it down my throat. Like, what feels good in my heart. And how much time do I have? In 5 minutes, you know, I didn't talk to my dad for 10 years before I came into OA. And the first time I went through the steps, my sponsor said, your father is a child abuser. You never have to look at him. But I was still angry. And if you cut me off in traffic, I had a hysterical reaction. And I wanted to take a baseball bat to your windshield. And I learned that if it's hysterical, it's historical. And if I'm angry all the time, there's probably some kind of poison that I'm drinking that I don't even know that I'm putting in. And I learned that it was my dad. Like, I would think about my dad, and I had all this resentment towards my dad. And I started bringing that power into my relationship that I didn't even have yet with my dad. And I would pray for my dad every day, pray for my dad all day long. And one day I found myself flying back to New York and making amends to him and saying, you know, what I learned in step four is, and this is not about what you did to me. It's about what's my pattern, and I don't want to do it anymore. My pattern is if you hurt me, I shut down and I cut you out of my life. And I've been doing that ever since I was 7. And I don't want to do that anymore. And we started having a relationship. And like 2 or 3 years ago, I flew back to New York and spent a weekend with him. And on the second to last day, we went to an OA meeting. And he raised his hand at the end and he said, "My name's Lou and I'm a compulsive overeater and I've been in denial my whole life." And people started hugging him after, and he took me to the airport and he said, "Thank you. You know, I think I'm going to start going to those meetings." And I was back in New York in December and I got lunch with my dad, and he said to me, "All I want is to hold a grandkid one day, and I know your sister is never going to let me, and I have hope that you will." And that's what this program has given me. Like, I don't walk around with the burden of anger or resentment anymore. And to talk about what it's like today, like the food obsession and the body obsession getting lifted, like, that's real. Like, that happens. If you're new and you're like, "That's not going to happen to me," like, it happens. It's how it works. Like, if you work the steps, if you do the deal, like, it will happen for you. And the total inability to form true partnerships. Like, I have amazing friendships. I have an amazing sponsor who's sitting over there who I'm not like, "This isn't working," and end things in an email. I have amazing sponsees who I love and, like, actually care about. And I have amazing... I have an amazing relationship, which I never thought was possible for me. Like, that was also like the food. Like, I didn't think that that could be for me to really be in a true partnership. Not like a needy codependent ordeal, but like an interdependent trust, love. I make mistakes every day. I'm moody. I'm sometimes horrible to be with, but like, I seek spiritual progress every single day. And as a result of how it works, I have a way to love unbelievably today. And I have been hurt so much. And to have access to a power that opens up my heart every day that allows me to give to others, it's an incredible gift. So thank you for letting me share.